Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the semifinal second leg review show for the CONCACAF Champions League in 2019 edition. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein, and, well, all I can say is this. Sadly, you knew what was going to happen after 180 minutes. It's all over. Sporting Kansas City going down in flames. Not only was it another, five-goal barrage by Monterrey against Sporting Kansas City, but they tried to make it a match, and even though they got the opening goal, Sporting Kansas City, it all went for naught as Monterrey got a goal to make it 6-1 on aggregate, and then it was 6-2, and then Monterrey just basically said, nope, we're not going to mess around anymore. We're going to come to your house and we're going to take you down and take you out hard. So all I can say is that the better side one, and all you can do is just tip your hat to a great team like Monterrey. And once again, it's a thing. All you can really say is that side one. And that's really it. And now we're going to get an all-Monterrey final, Tigres against Monterrey. And Tigres does reside in the town as well. This is going to be probably a very good matchup, a very solid matchup. Unfortunately, it looks like no guests for tonight. John Jagu is not available tonight, it looks like. Mike Kuhn contacted me from the Blue Testament. He's not going to be available to make it tonight, and that's fine. But once again, what are you going to do? What will you do when you're facing these teams from Liga MX that are powerhouses? The only arguments you can make from MLS last year is that, while, yes, I know Toronto made the final last year, lost to Guadalajara on penalties in that second leg because they leveled the aggregate, and they also leveled the away goals. The truth is that this was going to be probably a little bit harder than what many thought it was going to be, like from last year. At least with the Red Bulls, you know, if you want to say that if the Red Bulls were the closest thing to getting through, probably so. One second, please. There we go. I'm sorry about that. I had to take that phone call. Very important information for me. But back to the matter at hand. Once again, this is something, you know, probably the closest thing that MLS got to winning the Champions League. And unfortunately, the Red Bulls ran into a good technical manager in Mateus Almeida, and who's currently the San Jose Earthquakes manager in Major League Soccer. So, it's going to be interesting to watch what's going to happen with him this year in MLS. But at the same time now, it has to be said that, he has a stronger squad back, with all the players coming from Mexico. But still, though, the Red Bulls gave it their best last year in the semifinals. They probably should have scored a lot. And, you know, in the quarterfinals against Santos Laguna, that was a great comeback against Santos Laguna. That was a very good comeback against them, scoring two goals within the first 9 minutes of the match. Could have had a third. And the only thing they had to be, you know, mindful of was to not allow their Laguna, Santos Laguna, to, you know, have the opening goal. Not so much the opening goal, but at least the you know, the first goal to make the comeback, which eventually it happened. Once that opening goal by you know, being down 2-0 in the second leg, and then once it became 2-1, 3-2 on aggregate, that you knew the dam was going to break. You knew it was over. And it, look, it wasn't just the Red Bulls that it happens to. It happens to every MLS club. You know, when you're facing a damn good team, where you got to make sure you have a damn good lead and a sizable lead to make sure that you don't lose these ties, not so much on aggregate, but when you are in Mexico. Because, you know, Torreon, there is altitude. So if it's so much that, you know, with the Red Bulls, and if you're a Red Bull supporter, oh, here we go again. Well, you know what? No, it's not here we go again. I mean, you have to be aware of what's, you know, the atmosphere and the surroundings of these visiting stadiums in Mexico. I mean, look, when they took on Club Tijuana in Mexico, which Tijuana is not far away from the border to the United States and California, you know, there's no altitude. So at least you're even there. But, you know, going a little more south in Mexico, there is altitude. I don't think it's as much altitude as Guadalajara or some other places, like, you know, Azteca is in Mexico City, where Club America is. But, you know, the New York Red Bulls, you know, they just they try to, you know, leveled the aggregate. They leveled the away goals. It was a brand new ball game. They just had to get a third or a fourth. If they would have gotten four goals down in Mexico, then this whole thing is different, probably. Because that would mean you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, you got to tip your hat to these teams. Monterrey is a damn good team, and they showed it, and they proved it. Not only because they proved it because they were home, they proved it on the road. And we all know they have a bigger payroll. So all you can do is just, you know, tip your hat to the better team. And they were the better team, and they still are. And now what you're going to get is a damn good final. I know many want to see an MLS team, whether it's from the U.S. or Canada, to be in the final again to give this league an opportunity to show how great they are. But once again, Liga MX is by far richer, more powerful, and, you know, until MLS teams can prove that they can, you know, beat the bigger sides from Liga MX, or at least from Mexico, the bigger sides and the better sides, then we'll say that we are, you know, that we've made it. Give credit to Sporting Kansas City. They fought. They fought hard. They tried their best, and that's all you can really do. Does this mean that MLS is going to have to do things better? Does this mean that MLS teams are going to have to improve themselves better? Yes. That's what it means. The truth is that as of right now, Major League Soccer, and this is not saying this, first things first, I'm not saying this to hate on MLS. I think right now we should be grateful that we have Major League Soccer. We should be grateful that we have MLS, and that we have a league of our own. That's first things first. We should be grateful for that. But what is MLS going to – what will MLS do to evolve? And that is, in my opinion, the number one question that I think we have to ask the league. What are you trying to do to evolve? And I understand that they have their structure of how you're going to maintain these clubs financially, not so much spending. Well, now we're going to spend a little bit more, but, you know, is a little bit more not enough? I think it's time for the owners, the current owners and any new owners coming to MLS, whether it's through the way that things have been going until, you know, something changes. We have to ask these owners, the entire ownership groups or the investors, we have to start talking to them and we have to start asking them, do you feel it's time to basically cut the reins off and now start feeling that you're going to be on par, not so much with the rest of the world, but at the moment, the region? Because at this particular point in time, until an MLS club finally wins a CONCACAF Champions League and finally goes into the FIFA Club World Cup, we're not going anywhere. We have talent. That's not the problem. We are now restricting ourselves by now saying we're going back to two DPs, a three if you can pay for it. The truth is, as great as a designated player position has been, as you know, the TAMs and the GAMs on how you're going to pay for all these players coming in or keeping your players, the truth is simple. It's time to get rid of all these funny little things and start turning this league into what it should be. It's time for MLS to really to grow up. It's time for the league to grow up and grow up some more and do it at a fast rate. Because the truth is that the more we delay, the things will stay the same. You know, I cherish these tournaments, not just the Open Cup, but the CONCACAF Champions League. Because when will you see another MLS club that either you support or that you report on or other things going on? When are you going to see Champions League matches ever again? And when are you going to see these teams who have a great year the year before, and then when they get to the Champions League the next year, that they don't have it? And you know what else I've also said? And, you know, it may not be right, it may not be fair, but I think it's time for the northern end of the teams that play in the northern end of the United States, including Toronto, because I've already said Montreal, Vancouver, they play in dome stadiums to start their seasons. At least Montreal does, before they go outside to the Stade Saputo, where the Whitecaps are basically, you know, in a dome stadium all their lives. It's really simple. And if it's going to be, well, you're not, you know, they're not going to play at home for the first 2-3 weeks of the season, so be it. That's just a little sacrifice to make sure that, A, some of these MLS teams, you know, in the regular season, as well as those that are going to be in the Champions League, they get a couple of matches in under their belt before they start their Champions League run. That's the only way I can see that's going to fix this. And then you play those lower-level team, those lower-level sides from the different countries. Then you can face them. And then when you take on these big-boy clubs from Liga MX, then you'll be ready to go. You'll be ready to go. Everything will be fine. And you know what? Maybe you can compete against them finally. But until certain structures are changed and fixed, the Liga MX sides will always be the better sides. They'll be more financially better. And, you know, they'll bring in the more technically skilled players, and they'll beat MLS every single time. Well, as I said already, Mike Kuhn of the Blue Testament, not available tonight, unfortunately, but that's okay. We do have on my good friend John Jagu from SoccerChronicles.com and the Cantina MX podcast. Pardon me, John. Welcome. Good evening. And once again, we're going to see, in your mind, and you know what, I don't doubt you, of course, the two best sides in this competition fighting for the regional trophy for that FIFA Club World Cup position?
Good evening, Daniel. Yes, I think when the draw came out and we talked about these back at this side of the quarterfinals, it was, well, I mean, I'm not saying it was apparent that this was how it was going to turn out, but I think that the chances were pretty high if both teams, you know, took care of business, they were going to end up in the final. And I think that, you know, when Monterrey had their scare in the quarterfinals and they were able to kind of eke by, I think that kind of woke them up a little bit. And unfortunately for Sporting Kansas City, I think they kind of incurred the wrath of a team that is keen to win a title, because it's been a while for Monterrey. They haven't really won anything since, it's like 2013, 2014. So it's been a few years since they've hoisted anything, and they're desperate to do it at a new stadium. And they're going to get another chance to do it in their new stadium, because they do get the second leg. They're in their new stadium in Monterrey, which is affectionately known by fans as the tamale steamer, because I don't know how familiar you are with Monterrey, but it gets very hot in the spring and summer, and there's apparently no ventilation. So
oh God, really?
Yeah, so it gets like Texas Stadium steamy.
Oh geez,
there in Monterrey, so it's going to be. You know, it's going to be a great final. I mean, we were talking about this last night on our podcast, how, you know, outside of maybe the Boca River Plate game, there really isn't another derby in this part of the world that is as intense and as entertaining as the Monterrey Derby, and we're going to get one in the Coca Champions Final starting on the 24th.
Yep. Absolutely. Actually, they're saying it's the 23rd, but who's counting?
23rd?
It's that same week anyway. Yep.
Right.
Yep, on my birthday, actually.
Oh, well, happy birthday to you.
Well,
you'll be 39 again.
It's
congratulations.
Thank you very much. But, you know, I got to tell you, John, watching the clinic again by Monterrey against Sporting Kansas City, and you were right, you know, when Gerso Fernandez – puts in that first goal, I think the original game plan was just to, you know, play stingy defense like you did against Atlanta in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And then, you know, I think Diego Alonso said, nope, that's it. We're scrapping it. Just pour it on and pour it on as much as you can. And another 5 goals to Monterrey, 10-2 on aggregate, sends them back to the Champions League finals. And the last time, of course, they won the Champions League title was when it was the Victor Vucetic era, when he defeated Real Salt Lake for the first one. And then the next 2 years, he took on Santos Laguna 2 consecutive seasons. And, boy, I tell you, that – and you are right. I mean, that does feel like a long time ago for anything, really.
And you know, and they haven't won the league in that time either. So it's, you know, this is a club and the fans that are, you know, they want to see this happen. I mean, they've hosted the second leg of 2 finals since they've had their new stadium. They had the league final against, well, 2 league finals, one against Pachuca, which they saw Victor Guzman score a second half stoppage time winner to win the title. And then, you know, and then their crosstown rival Tigres beating them in their own stadium and lifting a trophy in their own stadium in the 2017 Apertura. So they are both teams want this very badly. I mean, that's why I think that this is going to be just an incredibly entertaining final. I think for everybody to watch it. I think what it's going to do. Is it, you know, for folks that weren't really, had never really paid that much attention, I mean, they're going to see what an unbelievably good rivalry this is. Outside of the Chivas America rivalry, I think it's probably the second most, intense rivalry in Liga MX is this one between these two clubs. So it should be a very entertaining. And for them to, you know, it's one thing to have a, you know, when they play the two games a year and it's a derby, and you know, it's a bit more of a regional thing and has been for years. But you know, they had a final, they played in the playoffs. They played in the playoffs last year. They're going to have another opportunity to do it again in the final. And I think that, I'm sure CONCACAF would love to have a little more diversity in the final. But I mean, as far as finals go, I mean, it would be very hard to come up with a bigger matchup than the two clubs that we have now, you know, the two clubs that have kind of split the decade, where in the first half of the decade it was dominated by Monterrey, and the second half of the decade was dominated by Tigres. And so here we are. You know, Tigres this is their third crack at this to try and go over to the Club World Cup, and it's something that they just absolutely desperately want to have. And you know, Daniel, they missed their shot to close this thing out at home, because they were up 2-0 against Santos. And had they won that match, that second leg, then that would have allowed them the opportunity to play the second leg in their stadium instead of having to go across town to play over in Monterrey. So Tigres fans should probably be a little disappointed that they ended up losing that match to San. I know that, you know, overall it didn't really mean all that much, but what it does mean is that they're going to have to play they get the first leg at home, and then they have to go on the away leg to Monterrey to close it out. So that's, I think that, you know, despite the history, I think that's the advantage Monterrey there, because of the fact that they do get to close it out at home. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, and Diego Alonso, again, coached Pachuca. He's already beaten Tigres in the final. He's beaten Monterrey in the final. I mean, this, you know, these are the two coaches that have experience against each other, experience playing in these things. I mean, again, I've been a Tuca fan my entire life. So I'm hoping that I'm gonna pull for Tigres, because I want to see Tuca get a chance to lift this trophy and then go be his grouchy self in the Club World Cup. That is that is the hope.
Yeah, that is the hope. You know, I have to ask you this. I mean, we all know up here who the better players are. Obviously, some of the good coaches that manage these club sides in Mexico, whether it's the Liga MX or the Ascensio League, is that what the second division league is? The Ascensio?
Yeah,
I could be wrong.
No, it's Ascensio.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, obviously Victor Vucetic was probably, in my mind, to me, I would say he would be like the Bill Parcells of Mexican football coaches. You know, no nonsense guy. But he knows when to show his happy side whenever a big goal comes, or if it's the big winning goal. Of course, the second time they took on Santos Laguna, they had to get a big goal or two just to beat them at home. And, you know, they did so when they were behind in the second leg and they got those big goals.
Right.
But would you say Tuca is – I'm not saying he is like Vucetic, but – you know, in my mind, Tuca is kind of like, maybe a grouchier Bill Parcells I would say Vucetic would be. Because to me, Vucetic is more like the teacher and the learner. But, Tuca's got the knowledge, but he's more of a grouch and maybe a taskmaster than what Vucetic is or was.
Well, you know, it's weird because, I mean, you know, Tuca is – you know, has never been fired as, I mean, he's left plenty, but he's never been fired as a Liga MX coach. And he's also been with Tigres for, I think that this will be his 10th year, which in Liga MX is frankly, I mean, that's, you know, that's absolutely, that's like Tom Landry level shocking that he's been
yes.
as long as he has been. And, it's hard to make the comparison to other sports, as far as the kind of guy he is. But I mean, I know that, you know, Tuca, in my opinion, you know, a guy who's been in Mexico in the league since the mid-70s as a player, you know, he retired in 1990 and went straight into coaching after that. And, you know, he got his first coaching gig in the mid-90s. He led Chivas to one of their rare titles in the late 90s. And he's had success at Pumas. He's had success at Tigres. It's just, you know, I mean, it's because of that I hope that he does end up getting this title, because I think that he deserves it. I mean, it's a great crowning achievement for him, because I do think that when 2020 rolls around, it will be his last season. And I'm hoping that he'll be
really?
Able to, yeah. I mean, he's been around, a long time. I mean, he's getting up there in age, and you know, Tuca's just a no nonsense guy. I mean, you know, he just has his, you know, his expectations. You know, it's funny because he's, you know, before he was kind of a more of a cagier coach, and he wasn't, you know, he was very risk averse. And with the team that he has now at Tigres, Tuca has been a lot more. Open to being a little, you know, to taking a few more risks and being a more offensive. And with, of course, the talent that they have, you know, up front with Gignac and Vargas and Quiñones and, you know, just there's so many of them. You just lose Joe Ander, Valencia and Aquino. And I mean, they just go down the list. It's a pretty staggered amount of talent. And Tuca, to his credit, has evolved to the point where he's allowed the talent to showcase their abilities, which is something that they hadn't really done in the past. So, and you know, the result has been, you know, they've won a bunch of trophies over the past 5 years. They've done really well, but the one that has eluded them is the CONCACAF Champions, the CONCACAF Champions League trophy. So hopefully, like I said, I'm hoping that the Tigres can pull it off. And if they do, it'll be the third time that a team lifts a trophy in Monterrey's home stadium without them getting a chance to do it first. And if it's Tigres doing it, then that's going to be twice they've done it. And Tigres fans will get to lord that over Monterrey fans forever.
Talk is never cheap, like, in Mexico, that's for sure.
It's like Joe Namath on the bootleg in the Yale in the Yale Bowl in overtime.
Are you sure you're not a Jet fan in disguise?
I'm not, but I do know about that play, which I think is one of the great plays in NFL history. It probably took him like 45 seconds to run into the end zone, but no one was expecting it, because he didn't have any knees, and he had nothing.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And now modern medicine, he's got a knee. Only it's too late.
Exactly. Yes, I mean, it is something that they will be able to hold over Monterrey fans forever if they can pull it off again. It's going to be really hard that day. I mean, like I said, I want to see Tuca win, but you know, we talked back in the quarterfinals when Monterrey had their, you know, the team had a chance to knock out Monterrey, and it didn't happen. And I said, you know, when a team like Monterrey dodges a bullet like that, they usually means that they're gonna go a long, long way. And of course, they made the final. And you know, it's just not going to be. It is not going to be. It's going to be tough. And emotionally, I want Tigres to win, but my head says I have no idea which way it's going to go, because it's going to be really, really. It is. What can you say? It's going to be very difficult.
I agree with you, because I think right now these are the two best teams that are in this tournament that are going to be fighting for the title. And you're right. In the round of 16, you know, Alianza FC from El Salvador, you push that thing into a penalty kick shootout. If the second leg did not have the penalty call, I mean, that's like you pray to God if you are Monterrey. You pray to God that, you know, your keeper makes that critical save and, you know, their keeper doesn't do anything. Because, I mean, even I said to you after that second leg, I said, John, I said to you, you know, Monterrey should be thanking their lucky stars they got that penalty.
Absolutely. There's no question. I mean, they lucked out. And, you know, it's you know, the – you know, I think of that scene in Private Ryan where Tom Hanks tells Private Ryan, boy, I'm losing my mind. What's the actor's name? Thank you, Matt Damon. He's like, he goes,
Matt Damon.
So that's what Monterrey's had. They've had to earn the immense luck they've had, and they earned it. And they, you know, they put a whooping on Sporting Kansas City. You know, a lot of Big Guy Mackey's fans are you know, talking about how they just, you know, make fun of MLS when it comes to games like this. And so, you know, they keep telling us that, you know, that they're getting closer, and then, you know, that the gap is closing, this and that. And I have to remind them that it wasn't but a year ago that Toronto FC beat both Tigres and Club América on the way to the final, and they only lost that in penalty kicks to Chivas. So
yep.
let's not pretend that this is something that's normal. I mean, I think Sporting Kansas City is like the best example of what a good MLS side would be. I would be curious to see how these two would go up against some stronger sides. Because I think Sporting Kansas City right now is one of the stronger sides in MLS.
No, absolutely. And Peter Vermes always does a great job with them. And, you know, last year, I mean, the Red Bulls, they have a big run against Club Tijuana. Big 2-0 win over at the Caliente, and then it's a 3-1 in the second leg. I mean, the truth is, while Almeida is a very good manager, you know that, I know that, you know, obviously it's a different kettle of fish now. He's with San Jose and how he has to be in MLS and everything. I think, you know, you got to give his tactics some time to finally mesh, and when it does, I think San Jose will be a lot better. And hopefully they'll bring in players that will adapt to his style and his, you know, his tactics. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is this. If the Red Bulls score a goal either at Guadalajara in the first leg to make it 1-1, leading on away goals, if the Red Bulls score a goal or two at Red Bull Arena in the second leg, if that ever did happen, it would have been Toronto and the Red Bulls in the final last year. Really think – and I'm not taking anything away from Almeida. I think Almeida – like I've already said many times, Almeida is a fantastic manager. But how close did it come for the Red Bulls to nearly level the aggregate and force penalties?
No, you're exactly right. And that's why, you know, I mean, you know, each year is different. You know, each set of teams are different. And, you know, I know that – you know, as an MLS fan, you know, as MLS fans, you know, if there's any difference between when this tournament started and where they are now, to me, the biggest difference is that MLS teams are starting to do a better job of getting better talent from outside the U.S. into MLS, you know, specifically South American talent. And to me, in my opinion, it's only a matter of time before they start competing in earnest with Liga MX teams to get that those same South America, because Liga MX has been a hotbed of South American talent as long as I've been alive. It's no secret that Liga MX teams have for years cultivated South American talent. Have done a very good. If you ever look at the Hall of Honor of like a Club America or Tigres even or Monterrey, all of them, you know, out of the 10 guys they're going to have in their Hall of Honor, 7 of them are going to be South Americans. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as MLS starts getting those guys, those all-timers start playing in MLS, then I think that we will definitely see the playing field. And those that's coming. I mean, it's probably going to start happening because MLS, because the salary demands are going to be met, and the you know, the quality of life, quality of play is going to improve. And if South Americans who have ambitions of going beyond this part of the world and going over to Europe, does it really matter to them whether they make the jump from MLS or from Liga MX or from the Paraguayan League? No, it doesn't.
No.
So I do think that you know I've always said that if, when the South American players are even in both leagues, then I think we'll see a much more competitive Conca Champions. It's not there yet, but I think within the next 4 or 5 years, I think we're going to start seeing a change for sure.
Well, and that's the one thing I agree with you there, John, is that there has to be a change in MLS. I mean, I think the salary structure in the league, at the same time, the acquiring of players, those rules for the league, the GAM, TAM, designated player, I think all those things need to be thrown out, and it's just I think it's time for the owners to at least admit to say, listen, if we're going to dominate, not just I don't think they'll be dominating, you know, all the sports in the U.S. anytime soon. But the truth is, if they could get closer to the NFL, then I think it could be made. I mean, there's still plenty of distance before they even catch the NFL. But, you know, I truly think that, you know, they need
What MLS has that other leagues don't have is competition.
That's right.
NFL has no competition. The NBA has no, and neither does Major League Baseball. MLS has, you know, 50 leagues that they're competing with for talent.
Yep.
Well, maybe not 50, but you know what I mean. But I mean, they have.
No, I know what you mean.
There's. So that's that is the biggest difference, and of course the one that they're competing with most is Liga MX, and I think that once they start winning some of those battles for that, you know, that 23-year-old Chilean forward. You know, if they can outbid Santos for, you know, for that guy, you know, we start seeing more and more of those stories, then I think that's when we'll start seeing MLS turn that corner. I think, like I said, I don't think they're quite there yet, but it's something that is going to happen. And I think that, you know, Liga MX fans, Liga MX, the boards of directors of those teams need to start paying attention to that, because you know, they've long been the club, the league in the region that has had no competition. Well, they're getting ready to have a gigantic spoonful of it, and I'm not quite sure they know how to handle that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
but here's the other thing.
Very interesting to see how it plays out.
No, absolutely. And here's the other thing I've also said too. I think, you know, it's time for MLS, because I know they've shortened their schedule now. They're going to have the playoffs now between the international windows of October and November. You know, I think it's time for them to actually start playing in February, the weekend after the Super Bowl. And I think, you know, there's going to be some grumblings, but the truth is, you know, I think some of the teams in the northern end of the U.S., and including Toronto, because Montreal and Vancouver, well, Montreal plays in a dome to start the MLS year because it's not warm enough to be outside in their normal stadium just down a couple blocks away or down the walk path at Stade Saputo. And Vancouver always plays at BC Place, your favorite road venue, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I think it's time for MLS clubs from the northern end of the country to start playing in February, and I think they're going to have to play down in the southern end of the country, like playing against Atlanta. Both Miami's going to be ready next year. Both Texas teams, the three California teams, maybe Nashville. I don't know what their average temperatures are during the winter time. Hopefully it's not too bad. Give them a shot. I think it's a time they're going to have to, you know, do it. If, you know, and plus, not only are you going to have three matches under your belt by then, but you're going to have, you know, then you can start, if possible, the Champions League on that last week of February for the first leg. Second leg will be that first week of March, and then from there you go into the quarterfinals. You're already playing your five league games. You're playing your two Champions League games against those other nations within the region. And then you get ready for the Liga MX sides in the quarterfinals if you qualify all the way over there. I think that's the best thing to know.
At the very least, you know, the four teams that make the Coca Champions tournament, you know, if they don't change the schedule, I mean, at least be smart enough to schedule like a little round robin against each other, like, you know, somewhere down south, so that you can you know, get the reps, et cetera, and start to. You know, whereas, you know, you play a minimum three games, you know, some teams play four, some teams play five. You know, that way, you know, we're not walking in, you know, stone cold like they have. No, there's, believe me, there are things that they can do. The one thing that's not going to happen, and I remember just listening to other shows on this topic in the past couple years, that they're, you know, pressuring CONCACAF to change the schedule to suit MLS. It's like, guys, no. That's just not going to happen, because MLS is the only one in the entire region that is on this crazy calendar. So they're not going to change anything for y'all.
No, absolutely not. And that's where I agree. Why should MLS ask for changes when, you know, this is how it should be? And I agree. I think MLS is going to have to adapt. You can't force people to adapt to MLS. because then it's not fair on the other side. I mean, and I agree. I agree. I think MLS is going to have to start looking at this other. I think this is the way it has to be for, you know, forever and ever now. You know, they want to, you know, make sure that the playoffs mean something. Well, if that's the case, well, then you're going to have to make the regular season into a little something more. Fixture congestion needs to be spread out even more. And then you can give breaks to whoever you want if you feel like it, because then you'll have more than 34 weeks to play a regular season, and then you get your breaks for the October international break, go into the playoffs, and after the final, you start the November international break, and from that point on, you get your 6 weeks of of having with the players union, you get your 6 weeks off, and then when around maybe after Christmas, then you go into training. You start January with all the different Mobile Mini Sun Cup in Arizona, Charleston, the Carolina Challenge Cup in Charleston, South Carolina, the Disney preseason tournament in Orlando, and there you go. I mean, whatever other tournaments you want to get involved with, and then there you go for that. There's no interference, and then you start all over again.
Right. I mean, in Argentina, they play the between season, they play their little summer tournament that they play constantly, and so there's there's certainly ways that they can do this just to get the teams better prepared. But you know, one thing I will say again for Liga MX fans is don't expect to win fixtures on a 10-2 aggregate, you know, moving forward, because that's an anomaly. That probably won't happen. I mean, if it happens, it happens. It'll happen very rarely.
Right. Absolutely, because that's for sure. That's a big rarity. But the big rarity is, when have you ever seen a Liga MX side go 5-0 in or at least 5 goals in both legs? I mean, that's impressive in my book.
Right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's something they don't do that to even like the W connections of the tournament. Yeah, that was. I mean, it was an impressive performance by Monterrey, and you know, that's why I would have to make them right now just slight favorites in the final over Tigres, even though, like I said, I want Tigres to win because my heart's with Tuca.
Of course.
So.
Why not? If he gets it, he deserves it. Why not?
Yeah.
It's just been unbelievable. All right, John. John, thank you very much for calling in, and I will talk to you again soon, very soon, before the Under-20 World Cup begins, because I have a very important discussion with you and several other podcasters and reporters that cover the game in the state of Texas, and would love to get your opinions about that. And before I even let you go, actually, what's your opinion about the new expanded Gold Cup? 16 teams, 4 groups of 4. You think it was about time?
Yeah, and the other thing I'd like to see is play the tournament, have each team have a home game and away game, and then play a third in the neutral site. I think that's the next step in the evolution of the tournament, because we need, if CONCACAF is going to be competitive beyond the region, they have to give the opportunities to the teams to play better teams. So
yes,
because of that, I mean, I do like the expansion. But I also would like to see the each team get a crack at playing a home game, because I think that would really go a long way into leveling this tournament. So
yeah, I agree with you there.
No,
I agree.
I mean,
because there has to be
not
a
just
fair
the
rotation.
US that plays at home. I mean, Mexico plays at home. Honduras most of the time plays at home in the US. El Salvador plays at home. Just because of the gigantic immigrant populations that they have in certain cities, so I mean they have a pretty good advantage. I personally would love to see if the U.S. played El Salvador instead of playing them in Minnesota, why not play them in San Salvador and see how that goes.
I agree.
Then I think the tournament would be a lot more fun, a lot more entertaining, and a lot more balanced for everybody. So if they could do a home and an away, and then play the third one in a neutral site, back in the States, whatever it is, then I think that it'll be good for the whole region.
Well, we'll see what happens there. Let's see what Victor Montagliani will do running CONCACAF. You never know. Maybe something different will happen. But, John, thank you again so much. You have a good night. Enjoy the finals in 2 weeks at the first leg, and this should be a lot of fun. Thank you as always, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Daniel. You have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. John Jagu, SoccerChronicles.com, as well as the Cantina MX podcast that's been broadcasting on YouTube. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, I've been a guest on that show, and him and his friends, they do a great job. And, you know, once again, more changes have to happen. More changes have to happen. And until they do, League MX sides will always be always fighting and getting to the final and hosting that and lifting that trophy. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. So it should be a lot of fun. But this will do it for tonight. And this ends the 2019 CONCACAF Champions League coverage here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. But that doesn't mean you can't not watch these two-leg finals, as, of course, it will be Monterrey and Tigres. Tigres will be hosting the first leg on April the 23rd, and then over to Monterrey for the second leg on May 1st. I want to thank again John Jagu for joining me tonight. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me this coming Monday as we get back to regular 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show until we get to the U.S. Open Cup review shows in May. For John Jagu, once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein, and this has been the 2019 CONCACAF Champions League Semifinals Second Leg Review Show. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good night, and as please, as always, enjoy your football. Thank you, and have a good night, everybody. Bye-bye for now.